This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وآله وصحبه ومن اهتدى بهداه. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. And welcome to Lessons in Fiqh. We're still studying the chapter that deals with ghusl, the obligatory bath or the total bath that one takes after certain actions or before certain forms of worship. And the hadith we have before our hand, Hadith number 104, although we've read it last time, but we did not have enough time to go through it, so we'll read it again.
Narrated by Aisha, may Allah be pleased with her. Whenever Allah's Messenger sallallahu alayhi wasallam took a ghusl, meaning a bath, after sexual intercourse, he would begin by washing his hands, then pour water with his right hand on his left hand and wash his sexual organ. He would then perform ablution, then take some water and run his wet fingers through the roots of his hair. Then he would pour 3 handfuls of water on his head, then pour water over the rest of his body and subsequently wash his feet. Agreed upon, and the wording is Muslims. Al-Bukhari and Muslim reported from Maymuna, may Allah be pleased with her, Allah's Messenger, sallallahu alayhi wasallam, poured water over his private parts and washed them with his left hand. He then struck his hand against the earth. In another narration, he rubbed it, meaning his left hand, with the surface soil. And in the end of this narration, then I brought him a towel, but he returned it and began wiping off the water with his hands. Agreed upon.
As you've heard, this is the description of Aisha and Maymuna, the wives of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, describing how the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam used to take the total bath. And this is one of the reasons that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam married more than one. And as we know, that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam died while he was married to 9. And Muslims are not allowed to exceed 4 wives. This is an exceptional case for the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And polygamy is not a new thing. It was there since the beginning of time. For example, the Prophet David had a lot of wives. Some say 1,000. Prophet Solomon, we know that he had 100 wives. And Abraham had 2 wives, Sarah and Hagar. And so on. So this is the sunnah of the messengers of Allah that is not a must. It's not preferred to all individuals, depending on their status, on their capability to tolerate, depending on their financial and physical state. But the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was married to more than 4. He was married to 9, and a lot of people talk about this in a negative sense, saying that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was a woman's man. And he used to go after women. And this is completely not true and unfair to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam had 1 wife until he was 50 years old. He had only 1 wife until he was 50 years old. And of course, one would argue and say, well, if he was a woman's man, then he should have married more than one when he was 20, 25, 30 years old, 40 years old. in the heights and peak of his manhood. Nevertheless, he had only one wife, and that was Khadija bint Khuwaylid. May Allah be pleased with her. And when he married her, some stories say that he was 25 years old and she was 40 years old. So after 25 years, when he was 50, she was 65 years old. Yet he was loyal to her, sallallahu alayhi wasallam, and did not marry anyone else. Why? Because he had this great love for her. When she died, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam married again and again. And if you look at the life story of all the wives of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam, you will find that there was only one virgin of them all, and that was Aisha bint Abi Bakr, may Allah be pleased with her. The others were not virgins. They were either widowed or divorced. So if a person would be labeled as a woman's man, he would not choose something that has been used before him. He would choose something that is fresh, something that is lucrative and nice to have. It wasn't the case with the Prophet ﷺ. Most of the marriages that he married, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, most of the marriages that he married were of those in need. For example, Hafsa bint Umar, may Allah be pleased with her and with her father Umar bin Khattab. Her husband died and she was widowed, and Umar went to Uthman and said to Uthman, his companion, his friend, my daughter has been widowed. Would you like to marry her? Uthman said, I don't feel like doing that. Thanks. I'm not in the mood of marrying. It's not something that you say, would you like to have a sandwich? Said, I'll skip. No, it is something serious. But only brothers go to their brothers and propose to them because they know them inside out. So Umar went again to Abu Bakr and said, Abu Bakr, Hafsa has been widowed, so would you take her in marriage? So he said, no, thanks. And then the Prophet ﷺ proposed to Hafsa and she became his wife. Only then Abu Bakr came to Umar and said, Umar, I heard the Prophet ﷺ mention her name. Otherwise, I would have accepted her for myself. But because the Prophet ﷺ was mentioning her name once, and he was saying that, what happened with Hafsa? I heard she was a widow now, and so on. So the Prophet married her because she was a good woman, and because she was the daughter of his closest friend, Umar. And he also married the daughter of his closest friend, Abu Bakr. And he also married, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, a woman that's called Safiyyah bint Huyay ibn Akhtab, which was a Jew and was the daughter of the leader of a Jew tribe. Her husband and her father were executed because of treason, and they tried to wage war against the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. She converted to Islam. She came to the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. He honored her, because she is now humiliated and feeling weak and vulnerable because of her loved ones are dead and her tribe have been scattered away. And he married her, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And so on and on. Salama, for example. And this is not our topic, but it's essential that we know our history. Salama was the wife of Abu Salama. It's not a coincidence. This is how they call their people, you know. If you have a son, you are Abu. This, for example, if you have a son named Abdullah, then you are Abu Abdullah. Your wife is Abdullah, which is the mother of. So Abu Salama was a great companion of the Prophet ﷺ. He was one of the first to migrate from Mecca to Medina. And he was the brother of the Prophet ﷺ, because they had the same breastfeeding mother. So they all were brothers because of the milk. When he died, this is an old woman, and she has children. He proposed to her in marriage. She said, Prophet of Allah, I'm a very jealous woman, and I have kids. What do you want of me? So the Prophet said, alayhi salatu wasalam, as for your kids, I'll take them in, and I'll sponsor them. As for your jealousy, I'll pray to the Almighty that it's gone. And she married him. On and on, you have Maymuna bint al-Harith, you have this, you have that, you have Zaynab bint Jahsh was his cousin, though she was married to Zayd ibn Haritha, who was his son, his adopted son. And when Allah said that there was no adoption anymore, it's not permissible in Islam to adopt, meaning that you may or may not take a child, care for him, and give him your name. No, you may adopt children, but don't call them after you. Because this is forbidden in Islam. Taking a child into your custody, feeding him, teaching him, taking care of him, this is an extremely splendid thing in Islam. The Prophet says that he who sponsors an orphan is with me on the day of judgment like this. And he joined the two fingers together. So this is a good job. So Zayd ibn Haritha was the adopted son-in-law of the Prophet ﷺ. And all of a sudden, this bond was cut, and there's no adoption in Islam. So, and he was married to Zaynab bin Jahsh, the cousin of the Prophet. They didn't like each other. It didn't work. They didn't have any chemistry. They were all good people, but there was no chemistry. Simple as that. She's an honored female, an honored lady from a very honored tribe from Mecca. Zayd ibn Haritha was a slave, bought by Hakim ibn Hizam, the nephew of Khadija ibn Khuwaylid, given to Khadija ibn Khuwaylid, who gave Zayd ibn Haritha to the Prophet ﷺ. And he adopted him. He loved him so much, he adopted him. He said that this is Zayd ibn Muhammad. He's my son. And he gave him his cousin Zaynab bint Jahsh in marriage. She didn't want it, but the Prophet ordered her to accept. She accepted it. And they stayed together for a while until they separated. The Prophet knew that they will separate. And he kept on saying to Zayd, stay with her. And he kept on saying to Zaynab, stay with him. But then it was inevitable. They had to separate. After separation, Allah ordered him that you must marry her. And he didn't want this, the Prophet ﷺ. Because in the Jahiliyyah, she's considered to be his daughter-in-law. She is the wife of his son, adopted son. But there's no adoption in Islam. So Allah wanted us to prove this practically by the Prophet marrying this woman that was married to his adopted son. And he married her, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And so on. So the wives of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam were there to convey to us knowledge. Otherwise, we couldn't have known this knowledge. We learned from the companions of the Prophet alayhi salam, male companions, by them narrating to us what the Prophet did alayhi salam, in the mosque, in the masjid, in the streets where he used to sit with them whenever they traveled. But we don't know the private and real things that happened in his house. How did he sleep, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam? How did he eat? How did he drink? How did he wash? What did he do when he wanted to answer the call of nature? How did the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam treat women when they had the monthly period? How did the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had intercourse with his wives? What things to say? What things to avoid? This could not have been reported to us unless the Prophet had wives, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, to convey to us this knowledge. And that is why here we find Aisha and Maymuna, may Allah be pleased with them, reporting to us how the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, performed ghusl. And inshallah, just right after the break, we will continue and explain the hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So stay tuned.
The tension there, what about the North Korean nuclear program and the six party talks? How will the tension there affect a relationship between U.S. and China?
They did that early in 1993, and after long discussion and negotiation, finally they stopped the program
Will the world be able to stop this flow of secrets? Will it affect international relations? Or were there simply basic known facts for most experts and most diplomats?
And we don't know if there's more to come. It's information war.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back. Just before the break, we talked in so many issues. None of them were related to the hadith we're talking about, which is ghusl. So let's go back to it again, hadith Aisha and hadith Maymuna. May Allah be pleased with them. They're describing how the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam used to perform ghusl, the total and obligatory bath, after sexual intercourse. And scholars say that there are two ways of performing ghusl. Because in Arabic, ghusl means total bath. So if one intends to perform, he dips himself in the sea and comes out, providing that he has turned the water in his mouth and sniffed the water up to his nostrils and took it out again, then he has performed ghusl. Now this is called ghusl. It's not the Sunni ghusl, because the Sunnah ghusl, you should follow the same sequence that the Prophet ﷺ did. But both of them does the job. They all do the job. So you have no problem with doing any of them. Meaning, if you stand under the shower, turn on the water, and wash yourself with the intention that you are removing the major impurity, sexual impurity, and you turn the water into your mouth, you make madmada and istinshaq and istinthar, rinse your nose, then that's it. As long as you've covered the whole body, that's it. It's enough. Does washing your body with soap is a prerequisite? Is it a must? No, it's not. What about washing your hair with shampoo? No, it's not a must. Ghusl is just to cover your body with water. And that is all. This is the non-Sunni ghusl. This is the acceptable one. And we will come to explain the Sunnah now. Mustafa?
If you jump in a swimming pool with the intention of ghusl, would that do the water of the swimming pool?
Now, we have to understand that the Prophet ﷺ denied us from performing ghusl in stagnant water. Now, if a swimming pool is a big swimming pool, you're talking like an Olympic size swimming pool, then it's okay, because the amount of water suffice, which means that the water will not become impure. So if you jump into a swimming pool, now one would argue and say, well, there were kids before me. So, you know what kids do in swimming pools. They feel the water warm and they enjoy it. So is it pure or not?
It is pure as long as it hasn't changed its color or its odor or its smell.
So odor and smell is the same.
Odor, smell, try again. Color, and its taste. Yeah.
No cheating. No cheating. Next time I'm going to charge you guys money-wise, huh? Okay, that's all. So as long as it does not change the smell, the taste, and the color does not change, then it's okay.
It's okay.
Is this acceptable to you? All? Well, no comments. And few abstain. Thank God this is not the Security Council. We would have had a problem. I disagree, and let me explain. Though this gets us way back at the very beginning of the purity and the water, let's assume that I am living in a house, an old house, and I'm turning on the faucet, and the water that comes yellowish with rust and dust. What's the color?
Yellow.
Can I perform ablution?
as long as the water is tahir, I can.
How the color is yellow? You can see it. You can smell it. You can taste it.
But it's tahir. It's not najis. The water is.
How would you know? You just said that if the color, taste, or odor changes, then you cannot use this.
Oh, it changes with a najasa happening.
Thank you. Thank you. And this is what was missing. It's very essential to be specific and choose your words carefully when you talk in terminologies and rules of Sharia. Because if you just say it without saying najasa, then any form of water that changes the color, taste, or odor, the smell, then it's unusable. And this is not true. This has been changed, the color and the smell and the taste. It's not water anymore. But it was not changed by a najasa. It was changed by a pure substance, so it's still pure. Now, in the case of swimming pools, big swimming pools, the water is still water, no matter how many kids peed in it, urinated in it. It's still water. Now, the minute it stinks, and you can, you know, smell uric acid, or you can see that the color is completely transformed and changed, then this is a different story, because it was changed by a najasa. Coming back to your question, dipping yourself in a pool or in the sea or in a large quantity of water, even if it was stagnant, it is okay, providing you have the intention. And why do we say intention? Because the Prophet ﷺ said that all deeds are governed by intention. So it all depends on how you, what did you intend before dipping yourself in the pool. And I'll come back to this somewhere, I don't know when, but I'll come back to it, inshallah, again. Going back to the Sunni ghusl, how do I perform ghusl in a Sunnah manner? Aisha, may Allah be pleased with her, explains. She said that the first thing that the Prophet ﷺ began with was what? Muhammad?
Wudu.
No?
Private.
Noor.
Private. Wash. Have ablution.
No? Mustafa.
Wash the private part?
No.
Wash his hands.
Washing his hands.
Washing his hands. Now, why do I wash my hands? Scholars say, now remember, it is forbidden for us, if we wake up in the morning, to put our hands in a bowl of water, because we don't know where our hands spend the night.
Said, well, spend it next to me.
Yes, next to you, but where? You may have touched something, you might have done something. We don't want to elaborate on this. Now, when you want to perform ghusl, at the time of the Prophet ﷺ, they didn't have faucets. They had buckets. So, in order for him to wash, he should put his hands and take the water and wash. So, the very first thing, which is putting your water, you're not sure that your water, your hands are pure. And that is why you have to pour water, wash them. Now you're clean. You can wash, you can put your hands in this bucket and use the water. Is this understood?
Yes.
Okay. So, washing your hands is in the case of the Prophet ﷺ. In our case, it's just turning on the faucet. Then he started with cleaning, washing his private organ. And why is that? To remove any filth or dirt on it. After intercourse, it's not clean. So you have to clean it and wash it so that you don't have to touch it again afterwards, because then you would nullify your wudu. So the Prophet ﷺ did that. He washed it. What else did he do? He hit or struck the floor, the soil, with his hands. And why was that? Why was that, Muhammad? You think?
Tayammum or something?
No. Why perform tayammum while you have water? Muhammad?
Is it because it takes the place of soap?
Excellent. Excellent. That's the answer. Now, after washing his organ, there is filth in his hand or something that is not clean. So they didn't have any soap at the time. So the sand or the soil does the job. So he struck the floor or the soil and washed it. So now he's ready to have the total bath. What did he do afterwards? He performed ablution, the normal ablution. And we have two versions. One version says that he completed the full ablution with the exception of the feet. He did not wash his feet. And he delayed washing the feet until the very end of ghusl. And why is that? Because at the very end, he should wash his feet before moving from the place he performed ghusl. You don't know what it will be in the floor. So he delayed that. And one version says, no, he completed the whole thing. So you have the choice whether to complete the full ablution with washing your feet or just simply delay washing your feet until you finish the whole obligatory bath. After that, what did the Prophet ﷺ do? He rubbed the skull of his head so that to ensure that water reaches to the roots of the hair in his head. So this rubbing process, you know, clears the way for water to reach the soil or the skull of or the roots of the hair. And then he brought three handfuls of water and he put them on his head. And this ensured that the hair was soaked with water. So it's not enough just to rub on the surface and that's it. You have to ensure that the water has reached the roots of your hair. And then the Prophet ﷺ poured water on the right areas of his body. And they then poured water on the left area of his body, ensuring that the water reaches every place in his on his body. And afterwards, he washed his feet. And that was it. This is the total bath. In one narration, as you remember, Aisha, may Allah be pleased with him, with her, brought him what? Come on, guys. We read the hadith. We read it twice.
A towel?
She brought him a towel. You have to try to think things over before, you know, the turn comes to you. Because I'm going to pinpoint you one of these days and say, you answer. Now, I'm just not specifying any person in particular. She brought him a towel. And the Prophet ﷺ did this, meaning that he's drying himself without a towel. So some scholars say the sunnah is you do not accept towels and you just let yourself dry. And they start justifying. This is good because then the skin takes all the grease in it and the water helps cleaning it. Other scholars say this is something depending on the person. The Prophet didn't want to use a towel then. So you cannot generalize this. You cannot say that, well, if the Prophet didn't use it, we shouldn't use it. No. He didn't instruct us not to use it. He simply didn't want to use it. So it's up to you whether you want to use a towel or not. It's completely up to you and the choice is yours. So this is the form or the way the Prophet ﷺ performed ghusl. And whether you choose to follow the sunnah, which is recommended, highly recommended, or you choose to just shower and take a total bath without any sequence or following the sunnah, it's also acceptable and there's nothing wrong in doing that. I'm afraid that this is all the time we have for today's program. So inshallah, until we meet next time, fi amanillah, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.